Australian schools are now including more Indigenous educational resources in classrooms and libraries, which is a fantastic thing, isn't it? An award-winning book series called Sharing Our Stories is just one of those good resources. Six new big, and when we say big, they're really big, big books. Six new ones have been released as part of the ongoing series aimed at middle and upper primary kids. And Liz Thompson is the director of Sharing Our Stories, and she joins me now in the studio to talk about the project. Welcome, Liz.
Hello, Wendy.
Go on. I practiced all morning. I sat there in the office, and I must have said it 50 times. I thought I had it nailed. Give me the pronunciation.
Well, it's Adnyamatna, but you'll be speaking to, I think, Terence Coulthard shortly, and he is an Adnyamatna person, so he'll give you the perfect pronunciation.
The spelling is very tricky. These are great stories. This big, when we say it's a big book that you've got in front of you there, it is a big whopping thing.
Yeah, well, they're big books. They're also published in softback, and hardback is a small book, but they are large. But I mean, I think that's fantastic because the artwork created by the kids is so beautiful.
It is
that
beautiful.
It gives it a really good showcase.
So you've helped make these books that have, there are quite a few of them in the range now.
There's 14. Actually, the second series is 8.
Oh, beg your pardon, 8. Yeah. Okay. And tell us where the latest ones have come from.
Well, they actually, this series, unlike the first series, which was primarily produced in the NT and WA, was produced in every Australian state. So there's Torres Strait, Saiba Island, there's Lockhart River in Cape York Peninsula, there's Elko Island and Bidjadunga in WA, but then they're also down south, which I think is a really important part of this series. So the community in Bendigo, the Adnyamatna community in the Flinders Ranges of South Australia, the Ninoni community in Bruny Island on Tasmania, and the Barkindji community in Wilcannia in New South Wales.
Why did you decide to head south?
Well, a number of reasons. Communities themselves requesting that they be part of the series, not only from the point of view of putting stories down to share and cultural maintenance in that regard, but also the representation of what it is to be Indigenous, that the top end community are often presented in an Indigenous context, but the communities down south, you know, feel it's really important that they're part of that representation. And I mean, particularly Tasmania, for instance, when I was going to make that book, I had a number of people question whether, in fact, there were any Aboriginal people in Tasmania. And it was a really interesting thing to interview young Indigenous people on Bruny Island and ask them, how does it feel to be told or to be, there's an assumption that you don't actually exist, and to hear the response to that. So I think also from that perspective, just to put into the educational space the fact that these, you know, communities are strong, that stories are maintained, and that this is part of the consciousness in Australia is a really important thing.
And accompanying each story, you've got an audio reading and a video, interviews with the kids and the elders in the community. It's the full package, isn't it?
There's an audio CD where each story is spoken, and those were made with recordings I did on the ground, but the sound design was with David Page and David Bridie. So they're quite beautiful, rich soundscape. Also, there's film clips on the Pearson, who are the publishers of this series, the Indigenous Places site. So there's a map onto which you can click onto any of these communities and watch a 5-minute clip. So you can read this book, you can read what people are sharing with you. So it's not just the story and the kids' artwork, but there's quotations around the story in which people tell you more about what the story means, why they want to hold it, why they want to share it, what it teaches, other layers around you know, what these stories are. And so then you can go on to these film clips and actually meet those people who tell you more again.
And not just for Indigenous communities, they're spreading, you know, into all schools?
Oh, yeah, I mean, definitely. They're very much about Indigenous, you know, education for all young people. And in fact, quite frankly, I think that they're relevant to all Australians, not just children.
Well, let's have a little listen to one. This is a grab from the book You Lose Cole.
We call these stories Yuramura, a time when the creation of everything began. A long time ago in the Flinders Ranges dreamy, the ranges were flat with no hills, and the Adnyamatna people lived on this country. Living down in a place called Pukalpula was Yulu, the kingfisher man. Yulu was the leader of all the ceremonies. Everyone was gathering at Wilpena Pound, waiting for Yulu to lead the ceremony. They grew tired of waiting for Yulu and sent a message that Walla, the wild turkey man, would lead the ceremony if Yulu did not come down. Yulu was worried that Walla would not do the ceremony properly, so he made a fire and cooked a couple of dampers for himself. The smoke from the fire was a message for the Adnyamatna people that Yulu was on his way down to lead the ceremony. But it wasn't only the people who read the smoke signals. The two serpents, Akura Abina, read them as well, and they decided to follow Yulu down to the ceremony ground. They rested near where the town of Kopli is today. Curling around themselves, they formed two mountains there. The male serpent, Akura Miru Ngarengarina, formed the small hill to the west. The female serpent, Akuru Atu Watarwina, formed the big hill to the east.
Very evocative stuff there, Liz. Sounds great, doesn't it?
I think so, yes.
And thanks very much to David Page for producing that. And now I'd like to bring into the conversation Terry Coulthard. He's from the Adnyamatna people in the Flinders Ranges, where the story of Yulu's coal comes from. Hello, Terry.
Hello.
And this is a great story. It tells us how and where the coal deposits came from in your area, yes?
Yes, it does. It certainly gives an insight to our knowledge about not only just life on the surface, but also life below the surface, you know.
And you're the translator from this for this book, were you, Terry?
Yes. I've been kindly asked by Liz to participate in translating everything in Adnyamatna. I certainly enjoyed that. Enjoyed being involved in that, mainly because I've for years had the I suppose concern that the Adnyamatna language, if we don't find ways of keeping it alive, it will die a gentle, in fact, a rapid death.
Mm. And you grew up with Adnyamatna as your first language, didn't
you? Yes, yeah. English is a second language for me.
Yeah. But most of the kids around your way, I'm told, of course, they have English as a first language.
Yes, sadly, Adnyamatna is taking second place now, mainly because, you know, the dominance of English, but it's up to us to find every means to try and keep the language alive, and this kind of publication is one way of doing it. We do it through music and other ways as well, but certainly, you know, we need every bit of possible way of keeping it alive.
Yeah, for sure. And how do the kids respond when they hear these stories in language, Terry?
See, in the past, people were, I suppose, see how language was regarded as being animalistic or barbaric, you know, unchristian.
Mm.
And then so for it to change now and it be recognised as an important part of our culture, it sort of has put a whole new meaning on how important the language is. So a lot of our people are finding different ways to retrieve the language, to also record the language.
I believe that the elders are putting together a dictionary of the Adnyamatnya language.
Yeah, I've been working on it for years now.
Yeah.
That's one of my greatest passions, I suppose. I hope that I can have this dictionary completed, you know, within the next year or so.
Can I become
more than dictionary. I think it'll be an encyclopedia come dictionary, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Can you let me hear a little bit of language? I'd love to hear the sound of it. Perhaps you could say hello and, you know, have a nice day to all our listeners.
Nanga ike noda. Wanda wachi ike noda nanga. Uyuru ka noda nanga ike nopal nga ola wanka nopal.
Beautiful. Isn't that great, Liz?
Yes, yeah. It is.
It is so special. And how many people speak your language at the moment, Terry?
Unfortunately, there's only a small group of fluent speakers. Mm. Probably, see, the Adnyamatnya Nation is probably around 2,500 people. Mm. Probably only 400 or 500 fluent speakers are among them.
Mm.
And then the rest are, you know, used to words and, you know, but need to also use English to make a sentence out of it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Mm. Yeah, but, you know, most people are familiar with the word and actually are more, they can understand it more so than speak it.
Mm. Well, you know, going from my pronunciation earlier, Terry, of trying to say Adnyamatnya, yeah, but I didn't in the beginning. I think I might be a very slow learner.
But see, what we find is at Eagerwater, which is where I live in the northern Flinders Ranges, we have a lot of Europeans come here and it seems that the Europeans pick up our language quite easily.
Is that right?
Mainly because, you know, they're familiar with other languages, whereas those ones who speak only English have great difficulty in getting the pronunciation correct.
Ah, that's right. That's a very good point, absolutely. Well, look, thank you both for joining me today, and thanks, Liz. And so how soon you've got the 8 books now, and they've all been released. They're going out to primary schools as we speak?
Yes, they are, and I believe they're actually going into the ABC bookshops as well.
Oh, fantastic.
So they're out now, and actually we're talking about developing an iBook series as well at the moment.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for both coming in. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you for allowing me to be part of this interview, and also thanks, Liz, for all your work in putting this publication together. It's very important. Mm. It's important for our culture to continue in many different ways, you know, using different strategies and to be able to keep the culture and language alive. So wonder what we're on
Wotang Nogo. Thank you, Terry.
And so, and yes, I might just ask you to say goodbye as well for us, Terry.
That's what I just said.
Oh, you did?
And I basically said, well done and all the best, you know.
Good on you. And all the best to you too. Thanks so much, Terry. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Terry Coulthard from the Northern Flinders Ranges in South Australia. And also very much thank you, Liz Thompson, for sharing our stories, for coming into the studio today. And as you heard, Sharing Our Stories is published by Pearson Australia, and you'll be able to find them in ABC bookshops where all good books are sold. Thanks, Liz.
Thank you, Wendy.
And coming up in a few moments, a great story about the old man and the sea still surfing at the age of 83. Isn't that remarkable?